is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 39 degrees under overcast skies. At the airport, they are showing they have southeasterly winds at 15 miles per hour and a full 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a chance of snow this afternoon, followed by a chance of rain and snow, mostly cloudy for the rest of the day with southeast winds to 20. And the real weather is expected to begin tonight. Rain and snow, that rain and snow could be heavy at times, beginning about 10 p.m. Look for a low around 36 tonight, east winds to 35, gusting as high as 45, and look for that kind of conditions to continue all the way through Wednesday. Coming up on the Midday Report, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan is not shy about blaming the Russians for our present predicament in the seafood market. Kodiak Island's representatives in the state legislature discussed some potential relief coming to fishermen and pressure from sport fishermen. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. We're in day two of vetting potential jurors in former President Donald Trump's historic criminal hush money trial in New York. Yesterday, dozens of people were dismissed after they said they did not believe they could be impartial in the first criminal trial involving a former U.S. president. The White House says it is waiting for more details about Speaker Mike Johnson's plan to bring three separate bills forward for votes on funding for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, plus a fourth for other national security issues, and is not ruling out supporting the measures. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby speaking to reporters on Air Force One.
It does appear at first blush that the Speaker's proposals will, in fact, help us get aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, and needed resources to the Indo-Pacific for a wide range of contingencies there.
Yesterday, Kirby had said the White House opposed a standalone bill for aid to Israel. Iran continues to tout its response to the airstrike that hit the Iranian embassy compound in Damascus, Syria, 2 weeks ago. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports multiple Iranian officials are speaking out to praise the operation without mentioning that nearly all the drones and rockets fired at Israel were reportedly shot down.
In the latest comments emerging from Iran, Iranian media quote the commander of the Iranian Army's ground forces, Brigadier General Kayumars Haidari, saying the Iranian attack against Israel had dispelled what he called the threadbare myth of Israeli invincibility. Haidari stressed that the attacks on Israeli military bases are part of Tehran's mission to counter and neutralize the financial, logistical, and intellectual support of what he called the criminal U.S. administration and its allies in West Asia and across the globe. He claimed that the Iranian strike had delivered a crushing blow to the regime's decision-making and deterrence power. He also repeated that any further Israeli attack would be met with a more severe response. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel is cheering the end of what he calls a historic tax filing season. NPR Scott Horsley reports Monday was the deadline in most parts of the country for taxpayers to file their returns.
Werfel told the Senate Finance Committee the IRS has exceeded many of its service targets this year, answering nearly 9 out of 10 phone calls, for example, in an average of just 3 minutes. More than 100,000 taxpayers in 12 states tested a new online service that lets them file returns directly with the IRS for free. Werfel says one key to the success of that rollout was starting small.
What we decided to do was find that right first step, but not try to, you know, to hit a home run at our first at bat.
The IRS will decide later whether to expand the new direct file service to more states and more taxpayers in the future. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
From Washington, this is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. United States Senator Dan Sullivan is heading to Europe next month to convince trade officials there to ban Russian seafood. That was one policy goal the senator said he's pushing in the coming month during a visit to Kodiak's annual commercial fishing trade show, Comfish. KMXT's Brian Venois reports.
Sullivan addressed the elephant in the room early at Comfish, which was concerned about the historic challenges fleets and processors are currently facing. Seafood processing companies like Trident are divesting from Alaska, citing market issues. The state's fishermen have also seen historically low prices per pound for their catch. Sullivan spent a significant amount of his time blaming Russia for the tough year.
We are at an economic war, in my view, in the fisheries industry with Russia, and to a related degree with China. Our officials in U.S. and the U.S. government need to recognize this, because the Russians recognize this.
Sullivan said Russia held a market advantage after it banned U.S. seafood products a decade ago. The U.S. embargoed Russian products in return. However, Russian-caught fish was still being sold in American markets through a loophole. That loophole was closed when President Joe Biden signed an executive order late last year that takes effect next month. Sullivan claims Alaskans are also disadvantaged by unfair labor practices in other countries that undercut prices on a global scale. He says he's been trying to work with Japan, one of the world's largest buyers of seafood, to fix the problem.
So I was able to engage with a number of Japanese senior officials, our ambassador to Japan, pressing them that they should institute a Russian ban on seafood as well.
Sullivan says he's also going to Europe later this month to meet officials there about instituting a similar Russian seafood ban. He says the goal is to fill any demand in gaps with Alaskan-caught products. U.S. Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo also sent a video to supplement Sullivan's remarks. She told attendees that recent work with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is more progress for the seafood industry.
For the very first time, the U.S. National Export Strategy, released by the Commerce Department, includes a chapter on seafood that was drafted by NOAA.
Sullivan also talked about wanting more research in mariculture as well as including fisheries in the upcoming federal farm bill reauthorization. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Kodiak Island's representatives in the Alaska State Legislature discussed some of the potential relief coming to fishermen on the final day of this year's Comfish trade show. State Senator Gary Stevens, who is joining via Zoom, told attendees he wants to create a legislative task force to study long-term solutions for changes happening within the commercial fishing industry. That includes some unknowns surrounding companies like Trident that are selling processing plants.
So what I've done is introduce a resolution that is now in the Senate setting up a seafood task force. We did this when I was in the House in 2002 or 2003, I believe. It was the Salmon Task Force. We were able to make some major contributions to really help the salmon industry.
Stephen says he hopes the proposed legislation will move out of committee within the next week or so. State Representative Louise Stutz told the room full of attendees that lobbyists promoting sport fishing in Alaska have put more pressure on legislators recently.
One of the biggest issues that we're fighting in the legislature right now is sport fish. Our governor leans towards sport fish. You take a look at our board of fish, it's weighted sport fish.
Stutz says she is also opposed to a bill that would require expanded electronic monitoring of fishing vessels as it is currently written. According to Stutz, the measure would put undue burden on smaller fishing vessels, and the necessary financial considerations have not been included. These bills could move forward before the end of this legislative session. Although the legislature is now focused on budgets for the upcoming fiscal year, Stevens says the capital budget currently includes money to repair and replace the roof at Kodiak College. The Alaska Senate has approved its version of the capital budget and given it to the House of Representatives in a swap for the House's approved version of the operating budget. Legislators have until mid-May to pass an operating and capital budget before the regular session ends. Kodiak's fire departments jointly responded to a structure fire on Saturday evening, which required monitoring into Sunday morning. No injuries or fatalities were reported, and the cause of the blaze is still under investigation. Bayside Fire Department received a report of a fire on Viewcrest Lane in the vicinity of the Kodiak Island Housing Authority. on Saturday around 7 p.m. Bayside Fire Chief Scott Ellis says after firefighters arrived on the scene, he asked Kodiak's other departments for assistance or mutual aid.
What we found on arrival was a detached approximately 30 by 30 two-story wood frame structure, appeared to be a utility or outbuilding type structure, garage slash storage building, workshop. It was well involved on our arrival.
Ellis says initially there were multiple parked cars around the property, which made it difficult to get close enough to fight the fire. The uninhabited building was a complete loss. Multiple vehicles nearby also caught fire, suffering varying degrees of damage. Eventually, the main fire was put out, but deep-seated pockets or hot spots continued to smoke into the next morning. An excavator from the Kodiak Island Borough was called in to help fully extinguish the smoldering remains, which were put out by 10 a.m. Sunday morning. Ellis reminds Kodiak residents that they can assist the department by maintaining access to nearby fire hydrants and putting up signage for house addresses.
So keep those hydrants clear for us and mark your homes, and then don't block things. If you expect us to be able to get up a driveway with an ambulance, with a fire truck, keep it clear so we can.
The cause of the fire is still under investigation. Fire Chief Ellis says a final report will be publicly released in the coming days. If you're bummed out about missing the total solar eclipse in the lower 48 this month, start planning now for the Alaska version. The next total solar eclipse in North America will happen in 2033, and the path of totality will cross northwest Alaska. For communities like Nome and Upyabik, locals will have a once-in-a-lifetime chance to view the celestial event. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the eclipse is already garnering interest from tourists 9 years in advance.
Travis Rector is a physics and astronomy professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Rector says the world sees about 1 to 2 solar eclipses a year, but the next one in North America will be on March 30th, 2033.
It's going to pass over the northwestern part of the state of Alaska. So the path of totality will be visible in western Alaska, so over towns like Nome and Kotzebue, and all the way up through Utyavik.
Rector says a path of totality is typically between 50 and 100 miles wide, and if you're outside of that zone, you'll be able to notice a change in the sky. However, he says you're going to want to go to Nome, Kotzebue, or Utyavik to get the full experience. And Rector says he anticipates areas near those towns will see a high amount of visitor traffic as people flock to view the eclipse.
I wouldn't be surprised if hotels in these communities are already getting phone calls for making reservations 9 years in advance.
As it happens, there's already interest in Nome. Leon Boardway works at the Nome Visitor Center and says he found out about the impending Alaska eclipse from a meteorologist friend of his.
No sooner did I talk to him, somebody called me up and said, well, we want to come up there in 2033 to see this eclipse.
So far, Boardway says he's received 3 calls about the eclipse, all of them from out of state. He says Nome has had a few tourism setbacks in recent years, and he's hopeful that the city will be able to accommodate an influx of eclipse visitors.
We had a couple of the hotels burned down and everything, and then we're coming out of this culvert thing, and everything kind of slowed down, but I think we're in a position now to get things going again and rejuvenate all this stuff.
Another question for prospective eclipse chasers, will you actually be able to see it from Alaska, a state known for inclement weather? National Weather Service climatologist Brian Bretschneider has mapped out the projected cloud cover for the region. While that part of the state is very cloudy, he says the eclipse will come at the least cloudy time.
If you were to pick a time of the year for there to be an eclipse, anywhere in the state, really it would be the western part of the state, which is the sunniest part of the state, and in March or April, which is the sunniest time of the year. So while the map may look like it's has a high likelihood of cloudiness, it's really the best time of the year.
Bretschneider says the eclipse will be particularly rare for the community of Utqiagvik.
They're going to have experienced totality for about 2 minutes, plus or minus, and it is their only total eclipse in a 1,000-year period. So this is the chance of a lifetime, and of the lifetime of many generations of people as well up there.
If you missed the Alaska eclipse in 2033, you'll have an opportunity for an annular eclipse in 2039, viewable from Anchorage and Fairbanks. Brent Schneider says that's when the moon passes in front of the sun, but doesn't cover it.
The moon will be a little farther away than typical, and so the moon will be smaller than the sun from our perspective. And so it doesn't completely black out the sun.
After 2033, Brett Schneider says the next total eclipse in Alaska will happen in 2097 and will pass over Denali. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola is far ahead of her Republican challengers in campaign fundraising. She raked in $1.7 million in the first 3 months of the year. About 90% of that is from individuals. But like most incumbents in Congress, she also received dozens of contributions from political action committees. Many of the committees are affiliated with unions or trade organizations. Political action committees related to oil and coal companies also gave to Peltola, a Democrat who has acted to support domestic oil and gas development. The Republican contenders raised just a fraction of Peltola's haul during the first quarter of the year. Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom's total came to $260,000. Nick Begich is only about $40,000 behind Dahlstrom, but Dahlstrom's campaign finance report shows signs of continued fundraising might. Several political action committees linked to House Republican leaders gave to Dahlstrom. One, the Congressional Leadership Fund, is also making independent expenditures to support her candidacy. So far, the fund has spent $75,000 on pro-Dahlstrom ads, and it can spend more. Federal law puts no limit on independent expenditures. Peltola has also benefited from independent expenditures. A group called Center Forward Committee has bought ads worth $300,000 to support her. The organization promotes moderate candidates. As spring sweeps into Alaska, weather and water scientists turn their attention to predicting when the ice of rivers around the state will break apart. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reports, it's an educated guessing game that gets more specific as potential breakup dates get closer.
After a brief period of warm, springy weather, many Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta communities plunged back into negative temperatures the second week of April.
Even though it might not feel like spring's coming, it's coming.
John Sostman is a hydrologist with the Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center and the National Weather Service in Anchorage. With spring and warming weather comes river breakup.
Breakup's complicated and it changes every year, absolutely. And we take into several different, like, measurable data points.
One factor is snowpack, how it compares to previous years and how wet the snow is. Another factor is ice thickness.
We're going to compare that to what is the ice thickness compared to what it was in past years?
Ice conditions are also important to consider, Ostman says. Community partners on snow machines report on ice conditions and, together with satellite imagery, help put together a more complex picture of the ice. It's still early in the forecasting season, but Ostman says air temperature also plays an important role.
We're looking at what do the climate models tell us about what we should expect our temperatures to be. So it's more of like a trend analysis at this point. Are we cooler than, again, historically average for this time of year? Are we trending warmer? And then maybe how is that distributed across the state so that we can predict where we're going to start melting that snowpack and rotting that ice.
Still around a month out from many villages' median breakup dates, it's a little early to say exactly how breakup may go this year on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
Overall, like in the most broad terms, we are not as cold as we were, say, last year. We have less snow most places than we had last year. And we think that breakup will not be as late as it was last year. And probably overall, we think it won't be, like, the impacts from breakup will be less severe.
Last year, severe ice jam flooding impacted communities on the Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Tanana Rivers. Conditions vary widely this year.
That western coast, the lower Kuskokwim, has a higher than average snowpack by maybe 20 to 30%.
Although it's an incredibly educated guess, fed by all these complicated data streams, Ostman says predicting breakup is also something of an art.
It's subjective. We have to make sure that we use what we know and what we've learned from the past to help predict what's going on.
There are two main types of breakup, thermal and dynamic. Thermal breakup is where temperatures gradually warm and the ice sort of mushes out and floats away. Dynamic breakup is the kind that can cause severe ice jams and flooding, where temperatures stay cold, then warm suddenly and dramatically, unevenly melting river ice.
So not only are we forecasting sort of a window of time for breakup in date-wise, you know, kind of on that temporal scale, but we're also looking at what kind of the basin flood potential is for, most villages on the Yukon, most villages on the Kuskokwim and other places across the state, but those two rivers in particular.
Ostman says it's a little too early to predict exactly what sort of breakup will occur this year, but the breakup outlook from April 12th indicates many areas of the state are leaning more toward the dynamic type of breakup, the kind that can cause ice jams and flooding. Ostman says he and his colleagues wouldn't be able to make breakup predictions like they do without information from community partners.
I got an email from someone in Bethel this morning who told us about a couple of areas that we really need to pay attention to as we look at breakup. And these are places that it was like, oh, okay, we'll look at those in the satellite imagery and some of the remote sensing tools. We'll take what you've told us and apply that to this qualitative and subjective breakup flood potential estimate that we're going to put out, because, you know, we are putting it out for each of the communities on the Cusco, and he's identified a couple of those.
There are a lot of factors that go into modeling breakup and a lot of uncertainty. Alaska's huge, but as breakup inches closer, so will the tools to help communities prepare for whenever and however the river ice crumbles. In Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
A strong U.S. economy is expected to pull along the rest of the globe. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. The International Monetary Fund says world economic growth this year will reach 3.2%, slightly better than its January forecast. The change is largely thanks to an improved outlook in the U.S., where the IMF now projects economic growth of 2.7%. The real estate market, though, continues to struggle. Construction of new housing plunged 15% in March. Permits for future construction fell 4%, likely because builders are expecting interest rates to stay higher for longer. UnitedHealth's quarterly results handily beat expectations despite a crippling ransomware attack. The healthcare company did lose more than $1 billion, but its revenue grew to nearly $100 billion. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. Pardon me, it is Tuesday, the 16th day of April, the year 2024. Skipped ahead there. The sun rose today at 6:54. It will set again at 9:25, giving us 14 hours and 31 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 53 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 63 degrees, set in 1965, and our record low was 13, set in 1966. Presently 39 degrees under overcast skies, southeast winds at 15 miles per hour at the airport, where they are also reporting 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service says there's a chance of rain and snow this afternoon with mostly cloudy skies, southeast winds to 20. Then rain and snow is a certainty tonight, mainly after 11 p.m. It could be heavy at times tonight, low around 36, east winds increasing to 30 to 35, gusting to 45 tonight. And the same conditions tomorrow, too. Heavy rain, highs near 42, east winds to 35, gusting to 40 miles per hour tomorrow. And they're calling for rain for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, too. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will happen at 4:05 this afternoon and be 1.3 feet. followed by a high tide at 11:14 this evening of 5.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 4:25 p.m. and be 2.6 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:23 p.m. of 9.4 feet. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. Gale warning tonight and Wednesday for the east side of Kodiak Island. For today, east 30, climbing to east 40 tonight. 9-foot seas building to 15 feet tonight and finally to 21 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, for our east side, east 40, seas to 22 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for tonight and Wednesday there as well, with east winds to 25 knots, building to east 40 tonight. 7-foot seas building to 10 feet tonight, and then to 14 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, east winds to 40 knots, seas to 15 feet in the Shelikof. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Tuesday, April 16th, the Solid Waste Contract Committee will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 1 p.m. On Wednesday, April 17th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, April 18th, the Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Well, today is Healthcare Decision Day. It's National Healthcare Decision Day. And senior citizens of Kodiak, the Hospice and Palliative Care, Providence Elder House, and Alaska Legal Services, and the Independent Living Center have put together all kinds of resources all day today until 4 p.m., and now's the time to make those decisions about your health care and future health care that you've been putting off. All the way till 4 p.m., they'll be having a certified Medicare counselor. They'll be available all day long. You can check in on your benefits if you're getting what you need or if you're signed up. Checkups on a first-come, first-served basis as well all the way through 4 p.m. Through 12:30 p.m., Alaska Legal Services will be there. I suppose they're only going to be there for a few more minutes. But starting at 12:30, advanced health care directives will be presented by PKIMC palliative care nurse practitioner Aaron Carter. That's from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m., advanced health care directives. And from 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m., there will be informational booths from Canada, also the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center's Elder House, Independent Living, Senior Citizens of Kodiak, and the Hospice and Palliative Care. So lots of resources, lots of information about your health care going forward, and it's all happening all the way through 4 p.m. at the Senior Center today. For more information, call Elder Services at 486-1368 or Senior Citizens of Kodiak at 486-6181. And it is Whale Fest. Things are going on this week and next week for Whale Fest. Tomorrow you can watch the movie Whale Rider at the Kodiak Public Library at 6:30 p.m. It's rated PG, and it's about New Zealand's Wahangara people who believe their ancient ancestor arrived on the back of a whale. That's at the library tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. At 12 p.m. on Thursday at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center, it'll be the book launch of the Aleutic Museum's new book, Imakan Imaut, From the Past to the Future. It's their latest publication, a history of Kodiak's Aleutic and Supiag people, written by local scholars. Again, that's 12 p.m. on Thursday at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. For more information about that, call 907-487-2626. Also on Thursday, the Kodiak Marine Mammal Stranding Update will be happening at 4 p.m. at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. That's at 4 p.m. on Thursday. What do you do if you find a stranded whale? The Shunack Tribe of Kodiak will provide an update on their stranding program efforts. Again, that's 4 p.m. on Thursday at the National Wildlife Visitor Center. Contact Matt Dale for more information at 907-531-5009. And on Friday, the ever-popular movie Free Willy will be shown at 3 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. It's a movie about a troubled boy's efforts to save a captive orca. That's at the Kodiak Public Library, 3 p.m. on Friday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.